Stage number 15433.
Peter McAleese, side 9-2. Yeah, you've made these plans.
Yeah, and I worked out how I was going to do it. The whole thing was based on my fitness, and I said, we'll get here, I'll hire a car, that will get me to that area. And the whole thing was based on me walking out of his area of influence. Can you see that?
Yeah.
So I reckoned I could sort things out from there. Anyway, I then heard the helicopter coming, and then it just went quiet.
The helicopter?
No, I heard it coming overhead.
Yes.
And it was working in the area, and then it just shut off, and then I heard it starting up again. I don't know how much longer. And it took off, and I says, I wonder what's happened. And I thought maybe they'd get the guys and try and winch me down, but it was on the side like this. Can you see that?
Right.
And, I said, well, I wonder if they'll winch someone to the top. And again, it was all to do with the clouds, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the height.
Yeah.
So I was getting ready to go to bed on the second day, the third day. I was getting myself ready and I was, padding myself up.
Could you sleep?
No. Really. I was, doze like that and then wake up. And then I could hear these Spanish-speaking voices. And I said, well, look, if they come in to get me, they'll bring some of our guys with us, with them. So anyway, I could hear the voice and I went, oh, this doesn't sound right. So I was either 3 or 4 clips of ammunition. I put them on the side and I got a hand grenade and I pulled a pin out. And the whole thing was, what I was trying to do was, it's funny, when you're in that position as a soldier, I say, well, look, I was worrying more about giving a good account of myself. Can you see that? I says, right, I'll wait till they get right on top of me and I'll spring it on them, because I really didn't know who they were. So I says, I had the weapon and the grenade, and when the guy was right on top of me, I just stuck on, and he went, nah, he went, amigo, 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 and he put his hands in the air. And he's in the colonel,
So he was one of the.
They put a rescue party together, and it was all
so
guys.
So he was a friendly rescue party.
It was yeah. It was all guys that knew the area.
Mm.
Right, so an ex-army chap, and he came up and he'd 3 campuchinos, and local, and they were only small guys, but they were wide, mm. We started talking. He says, you're going to be okay. We've got the helicopter. We're getting you out. So I said, how far is it? He says, 5 hours. This is the Cappuccinos. 5 hours.
5 hours march?
Aye. So I got up and I says, look, So this is down the mountain. There was no track. It was sort of virgin jungle. So these little Cappuccinos, I used them like walking sticks, They were only smaller than me. And they went along and I just leaned on their shoulders. And then what they did is they cut trees down. And they'd clear the branches off a tree and lower me down waterfalls and whatnot, sliding down the tree. So they had a rope to lower me down.
Mm-hmm.
So we started hitting the lower part, and I noticed.
Did they give you any additional medical treatment?
No, they hadn't anything with them. And they took me down, and I really knew we were getting low because I started finding sand beds in the stream.
Right.
I says, how far? They says, 5 hours. Now, this is. I told you I was getting ready for bed. It was only 1 o'clock. See, I'd lost all sense of time.
Right.
So they took me down, and at 8 o'clock that night, we slept in a stream bed. And these little campuchinos, they were hard as nails. They only had a little pack. And one of them says, I'll carry your pack. So they pulled a big, big, massive sheet of polythene and wrapped it around the 3 of us. And I was really disappointed because I was really chuffed with these men and the help they were giving me. And I could hear them splitting up my money. The cash they'd robbed me, And anyway, got up the next morning. I says, how far is it? It says 5 hours again.
This is another 5 hours.
Aye. So we finally sort of levelled out a bit. We were still high up. And then I started seeing.
You'll put the pin back in the grenade.
Oh, no, that, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I need to go back a couple of wheels, yeah.
After we'd been going about 3 hours, I found a hose pipe, and what it was it was like a funnel, and the water from the stream
mm-hmm.
ran into the hose pipe
mm-hmm.
through this funnel. I says, it's running water to go to somewhere. There was about 1 kilometre of hose pipe, and eventually led to this little shack. And I went, I got there and I walked in and the heat sort of hit me. There's a little fire in it. And this chap came up and he gave me this coffee. I mean, it was chunks and everything floating in it. I just drank it. It was extremely sweet. And there was a bed there made of Hessian.
Yeah.
And I just lay in the bed and collapsed.
Right.
I went to sleep. I think it was for about two and a half hours. And they woke me up to see the helicopters coming. So, you know what, by this time, I've made it, haven't I? I've really made it. Get back. It's just a formality. Step into the helicopter and fly off.
But
the helicopter's landing on top of a hill. The helicopter pad's on the next hill.
So it's gone to the wrong place?
No, that's where the landing pad is. You know, this pilot, he was an army pilot, and everything all had to be prepared for him. So landing pad's in the next hill. So I says, okay, and by this time I've got two sticks. I'm using the sticks to get along. I get to the top of the hill, and these guys started breaking out rations. They had pieces of cheese, and you know, I'd settled in by that time, and they had numerous cans of Coke, and I made a cheese Siamese, and I drank it with Coke, and it was beautiful, you know. Yeah. It could only taste that way due to what happened to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, I could hear the blades of the chopper coming, and I went, oh, this is terrific. And then the chopper pad was up on a sort of knoll, which was about 30 feet high, so I climbed up this waiting for the chopper coming in. And as the chopper landed, I was so exhausted, it blew me over and I rolled back down this hill again. And I was so shattered, I couldn't even fight against it. Can you see that? Mm-hmm. Normally you'd be trying to hang on to things.
Sure.
And I just rolled down.
So you had to climb back up again?
I got back up, got in the helicopter, flew me to an airstrip, took me out, put me in the caravan.
Mm.
Flew me to Cali.
Mm. How long did that take?
I can't remember.
Mm. All right.
Flew me to Cali, landed at Cali, straight into an ambulance, straight into hospital. And and I got there and the guy says, he looked at me and shook his head, he says, you've got four broken ribs at the front, four broken ribs at the back. My ankle was severely sprained, which I thought I'd actually broken.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know. And
yeah.
I lay there and I was just, my whole body was
bruises all over it,
you know. Yeah. And I got back and.
What?
Sorry.
Now, when did the story of what had happened with the raid catch up with you? I don't know what happened.
Right, what happened is, and I think the security guys that we were working for were trying to pull a flanker. And, you know, I've thought about the plot ever since. And, you know, the fact is I was dealing purely with the assassination of Pablo Escobar.
Mm.
Now, at the same time, roughly, you know, within days, a helicopter had been stolen from Medellin Airport, one of these big passenger helicopters. And just no one knew what it was.
That was a few days after...
And
What happened on the raid?
No, the helicopter was stolen before the raid.
All right.
Aye.
Yes.
Right, and the idea being, remember I told you about the Israelis?
Mm.
They've been training guys to come and do the same to the other drugs cartel. Can you see that?
Hang on, no.
Right, remember I told you
about the Israelis?
I found his Israeli slippers, and I said, and I heard people talking about the Israelis. And you know, I just said, you know, what about Israel? It says there's Israelis there. And what the Israelis had been doing is training guys from the other side.
Okay, from Escobar.
From Escobar's side to come and knock off the Cali guys.
Now, right.
And all I know is I never ever seen anything to make me believe otherwise. And I think basically what was happening was the intelligence services were trying to get each group to knock each other out and then clean up the mess. Can you see that? And I've never... nobody's ever proved to me otherwise. Because the whole thing was all too coincidental.
Mm.
So
what happened to... So your what actually happened with your raid with the other blokes of Dave Tompkins and...
Right, they went down. And the drill I gave them was that there'd be no raid with one helicopter. If one helicopter was down, we'd pull back and carry on, because the whole thing was dependent, it was aircraft dependent. And, you know, but if anything happened on target, you know, on the, when we were on the last 8 minutes, the job carried on. Prior to the last 8 minutes, there was still time to pull out and try again. Can you see that? So that was the plan.
So they arrived. They were picked up by the second helicopter.
Aye.
And they arrived at the refueling replenishment
point. Right. No. Right. What happened is, the guys were dropped off at the refueling point by the Bell 205.
Yeah.
Bell 205 came out looking for us. Mm. Right. Didn't get any joy. Came back, picked the guys up, and flew them back to where they'd come from. Mm. Right. So you know that side of it was done. Now when I get back.
Sorry, they'd taken them back to the original start point.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay.
And everything, all the kit was all taken back. Mm. And I say, that was the plan to try again. So I came out of hospital. And I said to the guys, okay, we're going again 10 days' time. I could see myself being better. Because once I knew my brakes and that were okay, I says, we'll go. And, the earliest we'll go is 10 days' time. Mm. And it was too much for some. You know, the guys
didn't want to do it.
No, they'd given it everything they had. Mm. And there was a couple of bottles twitching anyway. You can see it. And the other thing is, there was two guys in the team who weren't in the last team. And I was wary of them from the very, very start.
They're Brits?
Brits.
Why were you wary?
They'd never been in action before. Right. It was all sort of berries pulled down the eye and, you know, rifles with a rifle sling attached to the arm. It was all Northern Ireland type stuff. Mm. But they'd never been in gutsy action. Can you see that?
I see. Right, okay. So, they'd been in the British Army?
Aye.
In what?
Parachute
regiment. Parachute regiment. Yeah. But only in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, yeah. And they never had this sort of intensity of warfare. Mm. And I think it was just too much for the psyche, you know. Mm. I've never actually... You know, guys say their bottle went. The fact is... And the other thing is they were building up salary the whole time they were there. Can you see that? So once you get to... By this time, they've accumulated, 16, 17 weeks salary. Mm. You know, so...
Had they been paid, though?
Yeah, they've been paid. And the other thing is... The salary was starting to equal the bonus for the job. Can you see that?
Right. So they've got their incentive.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it was
evaporating.
And, you know, I thought it was just unique to me. And, in fact, I read Mike Hoare's book, and he had the same problems as I've had with fighting with mercenary troops, you know. Mm. They're motivated by...
Have you ever met Mad Mike Hoare?
No, I haven't, no. They're motivated by money. And you know, and the other thing is you've got to be that game. You've got to have that streak of the adventure, adventurism in you. You know, the adventurer. The minute you start doing it just for money, when you get what you want, there's nothing there. That's what I found with these two guys. Other than these chaps, we'd all soldiered together in the South African Army. So there was still the bonding we had. Can you see that?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it was the outsiders that cracked.
Right. So, what then happened after the after you come out of hospital?
Right, I said, let's get the guys back. You know, let's say get two more guys out. We're going again. So I spoke to the guy. I says, listen, we cannot sit here. I says, leave me here with Dave Tompkins. Get the guys out of the country. Panama is only an hour's flying time away. Leave them there. Let's get on. We can. What? There's only two of us here. These guys have been locked up. The other thing is, we were starting to drink. Mm-hmm. Can you see that? Mm-hmm. And it was getting to a stage where there was little instances occurring.
Yeah.
Little instances
well,
occurring.
Argies.
Arguing and whatnot. And I says, get them out of here. Mm-hmm. And what we'll do is bring them back purely for the job. Mm-hmm. So I sat down there and we started, collecting the kit. We got another chopper to replace the one that crashed, set it all up, and then... politics intervenes. One of the presidential candidates, a guy called Galan, had been assassinated. And they just went, the timing's all wrong. Mm. I says, leave it. Eventually, we were accused of actually assassinating Galan, we had nothing to do with it. Galan was a... And then they tried to blame us for training the guys who'd... It was...
Who... Where did Galan stand regarding Pablo Escobar?
he wanted him in. I mean, he was getting in on a ticket that, you know, he was going to stamp out drugs.
All right.
And it was Escobar that had him done.
Right. Okay.
And
Now, what about these Israelis then?
Right, there was some Israelis were out there, and from what I can gather, they trained Escobar's guys.
Right. Right.
Well,
they like to use Uzis, Escobar's people, there and was Ingrams.
No, you know, people say, you know, I was talking to the press one day. Now, when Galan was assassinated, it was done by many Uzis, you know.
Was that drive-by with a motor scooter?
No. He was on a platform and they just got around
shot
him.
Shot
him,
right.
And he was done with many Uzis. Now, I've got this sort of reporter comes to see me. And, you know, I'm still hurt at the man. Yeah, his name was David Lee. And he just got in his head about many Uzis. You know, he's a television reporter. And the whole time, you know, I'm chatting away like we are, and he kept going, but what about, you must have seen many Uzis. I said, I'd seen one mini Uzi. That's what I seen. I actually witnessed, saw it. I says, that's all I seen. I seen a couple of big Uzis, but, you know, he had this obsession. And he'd take me away, and he'd still have his little piece on here, because we're doing a television programme. And he had this obsession about, you know, and at the end of it...
Did he actually... All right, go on, please.
At the end of it, you know, he had actually, in his own mind, tied us in with the assassination of Galan. And, you know, there was nothing you could do. And I just, when I see the man now, I put my hand up and just walk past him. You know, because I actually spent as much time with him as I have with you.
Really?
And I laid out the whole story to him. And I says, feel free to question me on it. But he didn't. He just wanted the sensation.
Sure.
Side of it, you know.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
Right. So
Panama.
Yeah. Panama. Right. Okay. What I was trying to say was, I mean, had the Israelis actually shipped much kit out there?
As I say, I'd seen this pair of Israeli slippers. That was all I saw. And they always had. The other thing I saw was a Desert Eagle pistol.
All right.
And I kept, you know, like just talking to people. You know, there was a heavy Israeli arms sales team out there, and I think there may have been a tie-in with the arms. But I mean, the story. I mean, if I had to explain the story to you, I'd keep you here for another day.
All right.
I mean, the tentacles actually started in Colombia and spread out to America, Israel, Britain. You know.
How was that? I mean,
you know, for example. There was 40 tons of arms being shipped in, you know, on an island called Aruba. You know, the Israeli military industry guys that were... Now, I'm only going and what I picked up then. An Israeli colonel was out there. And, you know, it was to do with selling weapons. Not particularly who they were selling them to, with the training that went with the weapons.
All right.
As I say, the whole thing is... Yeah. I just know that anything I had... I wanted. It was given to me.
Right. Who was financing this one then? Do you think?
I think what they were trying to do was to get both the drugs cartels. As I say, the money always came from the same person, which was this colonel. But I think what they were trying to do was get both cartels to finance operations against each other, to wipe each other out. Can you see that? Get the Medellin guys to finance the Israeli type thing.
Yeah, so you reckon you're being financed by the Kali people?
Yeah.
The drug people in Kali.
At that time, you know, pieced it together since.
Yeah.
But, you know, at no time was, you know, there...
Do you see any Brits or foreigners or anybody else out there at that time?
No, I didn't.
No.
I never... You know, they got a funny system of working out there. You know, I was only dealing with the people.
Right.
If there was other people, they were in the background.
Yeah. So it's almost like a cut-off. You don't want these blokes in the apartment.
Yeah.
All right. So what eventually happened to this...
operation.
Yeah.
Well, we went up to Panama, and again, I kept on to the chap. I says, listen, this thing's starting to draw out. I have been away from home for 7 months. You know, do you want the job done? If so, let's get it together. And it was all, right, we've got the new helicopter. Mañana, mañana. And the mañanas, you know, turned into weeks. And I says, you know, look, these guys are going to leave very shortly. I say, because they want to put up with this. I mean, by this time they're in Panama, they're getting involved with women, you know, they're drinking, they get back to the good light, they're turning soft.
Sure.
So I says, look, I want to stand the group down. I says, yeah. So I stood the group down, went back to the UK, and by this time Pablo Escobar had been arrested.
All right.
Right.
House arrest at that time, I think.
Yeah.
Well,
but they knew he was going to Envigado prison.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So a chap then came to see me again.
Oh, no. Who? So you're in Hereford again?
No, I'm in Birmingham.
Right.
Sorry, Hereford, yeah?
Yeah.
I met the chap in Hereford, and he says, right.
Who was he?
It was this colonel for the intelligence again.
Well, he turned up in Hereford?
Aye. And he says, we've got him this time, we know where he is. I says, where is he? He says, Envigado jail. So what happened is...
So he wanted you to bump him off in jail?
Yeah, in jail, right. So I says, he says, can you do it? I says, look, let me have a look at it. Right, so I then fly out.
But I mean, joke's a joke. But didn't you find it was a bit near the knuckle, bumping this bloke off in jail?
No.
Why not?
Because he was running the cartel from jail, and the actual protection was being supplied by the government. He handpicked all the guards.
Right.
You know, the guards were all interviewed by him. So what happened then was I was flown out to South America, and it was
just you.
I on my own.
What had happened to Dave Tompkins?
Dave stayed back out of this one.
He wasn't.
He was in on it, but he said, you know,
low profile.
Aye.
So he was taking it back.
I then flew out there, and I flew into Colombia, and I got left on an airstrip. I just stood there.
Well, you're on an international flight.
Yeah, but no, I actually land in Venezuela.
Oh yes.
I get flown into Colombia from Venezuela by a guy who supposedly owns a farm in the border. Can you see that?
Right. Yeah.
And he dips down as if he's going to fly into his farm. And I'm skimming the sort of treetops on the way in, and the grass tops. So he just drops me and he says, there'll be a plane to come and pick you up. So by this time, I'm standing there.
What, two suitcases, middle of nowhere?
So I've acquired a knife. I says, you know, I'm not going anywhere without a weapon. So I'm standing there, you know, waiting in the sort of plane. And I see a plane in the difference. And listen, by this time, I'm playing mental gymnastics. I says, you know, are they going to get me here for, you know... Am I being used as a scapegoat, you know, here for something? Anyway, the guy's landed, and lucky enough, the chap from the helicopter, you know, the mechanic from the helicopter, the Bell 205 was in it.
All right, so he recognised you.
I recognised, but even then, I couldn't, you know.
You
so we started flying over Bogota, and I went, oh, they're going to land me here, you know. And then I seen a Cali newspaper. So the flew me and dropped me off at a farm there. And I says, right, I says, now listen, you know, you've got to let me get on with it, I've got to handle this. So I says, right, we want you, have a look at the jail. So they got all, the pictures of the jail, Envigado jail. But they couldn't give me a position in the map. So I actually flew up there, and it was supposed to be a pilot practice landings in all the airports. Mm. So he was doing Medellin that day, see. So we kept flying, see, there was an air exclusion zone around the jail as well. You know, in the shape of a triangle.
Couldn't you have got a visiting order to see
something? Aye. But, you know, what we did is flew along the line.
Right.
And I took photographs of the whole thing at the building. Came back, and they gave me these pictures, and I says, those pictures are not right. He says, why? I said, because the building runs like that, you know, from right to left, which is, in that case, it was north to south again, and northerly direction to southerly direction. He says, but... You know, the way guy, he says, that's looking into the jail. And what happened is they developed the pictures back to front. Can you see it? Which made it look like the building was running like that.
All right.
Can you see that? And what put me onto it was the man's lanyard. He had the picture was developed, his lanyard and cap badge on the wrong side.
Right.
I went, got it. Anyway, so I then sat and started working out a plan again. So I've got to work back.
Yeah.
And to try and find out where it is in the map. So the aerial photographs, they weren't actually aerial photographs, they were taken from the side, can you see that?
Yeah,
so I've got, aye, yeah. So I can't actually get them together. So what I did is I started working my way in Medellin Airport. It's a very, very prominent knoll. When they were making the airport, they just made a grass mound like that, and it's in it. So what I did then was I lined the map up with the photographs, and they had the, what happens is the Medellin River goes into a channel, and it's actually channeled through Medellin.
So what were you talking about, distance or direction?
Distance and directions. Direction, yeah. So I lined the two up with a map. I says, that's a no, that's what it is in the map. And I just started working my way back contour by contour. And I finally pinpointed the place. I says, right.
So was it on any map?
Yeah, it was, the house wasn't on there because it was a newly built thing. It was custom built.
Right.
You see, this is where the problem came.
But is this the period when they described him as being in house arrest?
Yeah, house arrest was Envigado Jail, which was custom built for him.
Yes.
And
yes,
It was
a scandal at the time.
So I then says, right, I've got it. So I started hatching another plan. So the elections were coming up. And they says, can you do it? I says, well, I don't know if I can do it, but I'll have a go at it.
Yeah.
And by this time, the guy got to know me. He says, Peter, you know, he looked at me probably like you look at me too. He said, this guy's got a screw loose. And I says, okay, he says, right, we're going to ship you home for the elections. We don't want you around here, you know. And they shipped me home.
So how many guards were on this?
Again, it was the guards were in batches. Can you see that? There was a road came up to it, and there was a camp halfway up the hill with a group of men in it.
Yeah.
And then there was one, two, three guard towers either side. And in actual fact, although the place had double line of fencing in it, there was places where you could get underneath the fencing. Can you see that? And it was all from the photographs.
It wasn't pinned to the ground.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. See, what happened was there was a river actually ran along the side of it. So it was, what they'd done is built a channel around it, so you could actually get down some of the channels. Can you see that?
Right.
As I say, there were six guard towers, and so I started hatching a plan again. Then I came back. You know, of course, he was a really intelligent guy. And he says to me, I've got a good idea. I says, what is it? He says, why don't we get an AIDS victim that wants to look after his family? And we'll train him as a kamikaze pilot, and he can fly an aeroplane into it. You know, he was always... and, you know, when I say, but, you know, what's make you think... I
said, what did you say to that? Was he dead serious?
Oh, he wasn't.
Really intense.
I said, but what...
It built up to it.
You know what happens if the guy changes his mind? He says he can't change his mind because once the aircraft takes on, he was into electronics and I'll lock the doors and the wheels will drop off, which means he can't land again, you know. And I said, what? You know, well, I said only an intelligent guy could dream that one up, you know. And,
oh, gosh.
You see, I came back and then the whole thing died down. I never heard anything again. I have never heard of any of those people, seen any of those people since.
Right. He was killed eventually. Escobar, wasn't he? What happened to him?
You know, the authorities here take all the credit for it. You know, it was an SAS-trained group and all that. You know, the fact is either the police were getting on top of it, or there was one hell of a plot there. And, you know, all I know is I studied Pablo Escobar, and, you know, it's some flair about him. Like, you know, and you know, I profiled the guy, and you know, because I was going to do business against him, and you know, you could like some of his traits. Like, he would get into Bogota, and this is the most wanted man in the country, take over a nightclub and say to everybody, don't worry folks, you know, we're going to have a good night in here, everything you drink is free, everything you eat is free, there'll be taxis laid on to take you home. He'd have a night in a nightclub. Nobody was allowed to come or go. He'd enjoy himself and then take off, you know, things like that. And the other thing is, he was in Medellin with some of the people, he was a bit of a Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And you know, when people used to approach him with the drugs, he says, please don't hold me responsible for what an American's putting up his nose. You know, an easy way of getting out of here. And
sure.
I'm sure everybody can moralise about it, but you know, when there's a load of poverty around here and he's employing 2,000 of the people, or, you know, 2,000 men who are maintaining 2,000 families, you know, it's an awful lot. So, I've got a terrible feeling that the guy may not be dead. And, you know, I've got nothing to prove it. But it's just that the whole thing was handled so fusselessly, you know.
I've forgotten the precise details.
He was actually with only one bodyguard. they reckon they caught him and they were scanning telephone his conversations and whatnot, and they actually got him in place and done him. And the chap had a beard, you know, Escobar, when I knew him, with a moustache and was clean shaven, and the authorities could have worn him down. But, you know, I can't help thinking that a man who was cunning like that, you know, you could have had a man as him, can you see that?
Yeah.
What's the word they use? A patsy or something they call them. You know, somebody else.
Scapegoat,
yeah. You know.
Stool pigeon.
Yeah.
Crosswords.
Aye. But, I don't know. You know, it's just when I turned around, as someone who was on to him for the best part of 18 months, and you could never get him in place, I was surprised. But
What was your reaction when you've read that he'd been or heard that he'd been killed?
A bit of both, because I felt I'd missed him. Then again, if the authorities didn't get him, it's because the authorities, they probably tackled it through the proper channels this time and got everybody on sides. Yeah. But I just know when I was there, they were paranoid. Like, you know, for example, if you briefed a brigade commander that you're going to do a raid in Escobar's house, you could guarantee that he wouldn't be there the next day.
No.
As the helicopters used to land where the troops come in, the guy was coming out with soft drinks for the crews of the helicopters. Can you see that?
Who would be?
Like, say they were going to raid Escobar's house.
Yeah.
Right, the helicopter.